Eric Wustrow, and along with my co-authors, Colleen Swanson and Alex Halderman, I'm going to be presenting Tap Dance, our end-to-middle anti-censorship without flow blocking. So the problem that we're talking about today is internet censorship done by governments around the world. You've probably heard of China or Iran doing internet censorship, but this is a fairly widespread problem. Many countries have this, and this isn't meant to be a definitive list so much as just to show that it's a fairly widespread an ongoing problem. And there's been a number of attempts in recent years trying to address a way to get around this type of censorship. In particular, there's this technique called end-to-middle proxies, and in particular, three designs that fall under this category, telex, decoy routing, and serapede, presented all in 2011. And these designs have their sort of own characteristics, but in general, the way that end-to-middle proxies work is that a client is trying to get to a blocked website that their sensor is keeping them from accessing, either through DNS blocking or IP blocking or something like that. So instead, the client is going to download one of these end-to-middle proxies on their computer and create a decoy connection to a decoy server. This is an unblocked server that they can access. And this connection passes through an internet service provider that's outside of the sensor's country. And at this internet service provider, there is an end-to-middle proxy that can watch this connection go past. And the client specially tags this connection in a way that only the end-to-middle proxy can see, that the sensor cannot see. And when the end-to-middle proxy sees one of these specially tagged connections, it uses an inline flow diverting or blocking device to cut off the connection with the true decoy server and pretend to be the decoy server in place. And so now the client and the end-to-middle proxy are talking as if the client is talking to the decoy server, and the client can use the proxy as it would a normal proxy. And to the sensor, this looks like the client is still just talking to the decoy server. Now, when we approached a number of ISPs asking them if they would deploy such an end-to-middle proxy, they were all actually very interested. We were surprised to find to actually do this, and they were willing to help deploy this and help in our efforts. However, when they found out about this inline blocking element, they said, no, this is not something that we can do. This impacts our service level agreements with customers. This may increase our latency. This may make it more difficult to track down problems in our network. This is just too expensive of a device to put in our networks for this project. So with Tap Dance, we asked the question, can we build an end-to-middle anti-censorship proxy without a flow blocking, an inline flow blocking device? Instead, specifically, Tap Dance is going to work with just a passive tap, so it can only see a copy of packets from the client to the server, and it also has the ability to inject packets into the network as if they were spoofed from the decoy server to the client. But it can't redirect flows, and it can't block specific packets or flows or do anything of the previous designs required. So why can't we just take existing end-to-middle proxies and remove this inline blocking element and just use a passive tap? Well, one of the challenges to a passive tap design end-to-middle proxy is that when the client sends a request to the decoy server, that request is going to get copied to both the decoy server and the end-to-middle proxy. And both of those devices are going to create a response in this case. This could be an HTTP response, for example, and send it back to the client. Now, the client could differentiate between these two responses, and they could be encrypted so that the sensor couldn't tell which one was which or which one contained an end-to-middle proxy response. However, at the TCP level, this is going to look very suspicious to the sensor because the decoy server has apparently just sent two different messages to the client, and this wouldn't happen in normal connections to a decoy server. So we call this challenge the duplicate data challenge, and this is that when a client sends a request, it's going to get back two responses, essentially, one from the end-to-middle proxy and one from the decoy server. And in the traditional end-to-middle proxy designs, we can block that using the inline blocking device, either by blocking the request from reaching the decoy server or blocking the response from the decoy server. But instead, in a passive tap design in Tap Dance, we have to figure out some way to never let the decoy server send that message in the first place. And the way that we do that is with an incomplete HTTP request. So this is an example HTTP request that is incomplete. The reason that it is incomplete is because it does not end with two backslash r backslash ends. A complete request would end with two line breaks. This request also contains some padding so that it has about the same length as a normal HTTP request would to a decoy server, and we'll see how that's important later. But if we send this incomplete HTTP request to a decoy server, what it's going to do is it's going to basically just wait for the rest of this request. It's going to say, OK, I've received part of this request. I'm just going to maybe acknowledge it at the TCP layer and wait for the rest of the data to come. At this point, the tapdance proxy can see this request and respond with its own response, and it will be the only response back to the client. But this introduces a second challenge. And that is a challenge that we call the inconsistent TCP state challenge. This is the challenge that when the tapdance proxy sends this data back, the client is going to acknowledge it at the TCP layer. And this is going to, again, because we don't have an inline blocking element, make it all the way back to the decoy server. And this TCP data is actually going to be a different state than the decoy server is expecting. Indeed, this is acknowledging data that the decoy server hasn't even sent yet, according to the decoy server. And even weirder, according to the decoy server, the client may send additional data after this that also will have an incorrect TCP state. And so the question is, what will the decoy server do in this case of receiving such weird TCP messages? Well, according to the TCP specification, they're supposed to drop these messages. And indeed, Linux does implement that correctly in most modern versions of Linux. There are some implementations of embedded devices and servers that do not implement this correctly and respond with either acknowledgement packets or reset packets. And you can't use those for decoy servers, but we'll show that those aren't very common on the internet in a bit. A third place that tapdance differs from, or another place that tapdance differs from the previous three designs is in its tagging method. So when a client wants to communicate with an end-to-middle proxy, it needs to tag its connection in a way that only the end-to-middle proxy can see, and the client can't sort of distinguish this tag from an untagged connection. And in Telex and Decoy routing, this tag is placed, this steganographic tag is placed in the TLS client random field of the TLS handshake, which is a nonce in the TLS handshake. And Cirripede uses successive TCP initial sequence numbers in order to encode a similar tag. But all of these sort of techniques are limited in that they are either a fixed size or require multiple connections in order to carry out a length of a tag. And so in tapdance, we found a way to make an arbitrary length tag encoded into the TLS ciphertext. So this is the application data packet that the client is going to send to the decoy server. To give you an example of sort of how this works from a high level, let's say that we have Alice and Bob, and Alice is a client, and Bob is a server, and they're communicating over some encrypted channel. This could be TLS, for example. And because it's TLS, they start by establishing a shared secret or doing some kind of key exchange to establish a shared secret. And then Alice encrypts data, sends it to Bob, who decrypts it with that same key. And along this channel, Eve, in this case the end-to-middle proxy, can observe the encrypted data, the ciphertext in this case, but doesn't share a key, doesn't have the shared secret that Alice and Bob have. Instead, Eve has a different shared secret or even a public-private key pair with Alice. And the goal is for Alice to communicate data to Eve over this ciphertext channel, while at the same time, when that same ciphertext gets decrypted on Bob's end, is valid data. That is, if Bob is a web server, that will be valid HTTP data. And Bob won't just crash or send an error message in response. And the way that we do this is by leveraging ciphertext malleability. So we found a way to do this with both stream ciphers and CBC mode ciphers. I'll just go over stream ciphers now, but you can read the paper or talk to me offline about how to do it with CBC ciphers. So a stream cipher operates by XORing the plaintext with a keystream. So in this case, we have two plaintext blocks that is XORed with the keystream to result in two ciphertext blocks. And this has the property that if you flip a single bit in the plaintext, you'll flip that same position bit in the ciphertext. Now, it's also true if I have some ciphertext that I desire, that I want this plaintext to encrypt to, I can just pick some ciphertext, in this case 01020304, and XOR it with the keystream to compute plain text, that when I encrypt these two plain text blocks, I will get the desired ciphertext that I wanted. Now, I can also do this at the bitwise level. If there are some constraints in my plain text, for example, if the first four bits of my plain text in the second block have to start with zeros, I can still do this by only encoding my message in the least significant four bits of each byte in the second ciphertext block. So now, if we look back at our incomplete HTTP request example, you can sort of see where we're going to put this plain text that has some constraints, but it's going to encode our tag in the ciphertext. So this is, again, our incomplete HTTP request, but instead of just having padding, we change our padding such that when we encrypt this whole incomplete HTTP request using the shared secret with the decoy server, we result in a ciphertext that contains our tag, highlighted in red at the bottom. We send that to the decoy server. It's picked up by the tapdance station, and the tapdance station breaks this into two parts. The first part is decoded using Alligator, which is an algorithm to encode elliptic curve points into uniform random strings so that they're indistinguishable from random strings. And we use this to do an elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman exchange with the tapdance server and arrive at a shared secret with the server. We then use that key to decrypt the rest of the payload, which is, again, arbitrary length, and arrive at the shared secret between the client and the decoy server, as well as other TLS parameters that will allow us to pretend to be the decoy server. So if we step back and look at the tapdance protocol from a high level, it looks something like this. The client creates a normal TLS handshake with the decoy server. In its first request, in its first encrypted request, it sends one of these incomplete requests that contains this special tag. The tapdance proxy can extract this tag and then pretend to be the decoy server, respond with a response that says, "Hello, I'm the decoy. I'm the tapdance proxy here," and feel free to use this as a tapdance connection. Meanwhile, the decoy server doesn't send anything. And the client can send back an encrypted proxy request for, say, a blocked website, in this case, blocked.com, which the tapdance proxy can again decrypt and go fetch, and then send back the blocked HTML. And again, the decoy server is going to ignore these additional messages because of as per the TCP specification. Now note that this doesn't come for free. The sensor in this case can actually do some active probing to determine if a particular connection is a tapdance connection. So in this case, what a sensor can do is it can send a stale TCP acknowledgement for previous data that the decoy server has apparently sent in the past. And if it goes back far enough, it will actually pick up the decoy server's true state, and the decoy server will respond with its acknowledgement of what it thinks the TCP state is, which will differ from what the tapdance proxy has put forth to the client. And so the sensor will be able to distinguish this connection from a normal TLS connection to a decoy server. Now, there is an active defense that we have in mind where the tapdance proxy could see such active probes going past. It can't block them, and it can't stop the decoy server from sending this response. However, it can respond as if it were the decoy server in all cases, even if it is not a tapdance proxy, making the sensor unable to distinguish between tapdance proxy flows or innocuous TLS connections. So in order to evaluate how many decoy servers there were on the internet that would allow these weird incomplete requests and this weird TCP tricks going on, we sent an incomplete request to an Alexa top 1 million hosts and a sample of the IPv4 address space. And this is on the x-axis is the length of time that it took for the server before it sent us either a timeout message or some kind of error or some data that would reveal to the sensor if we were still using this connection as a tapdance connection that something weird was going on. And we can see that about over 50% of the hosts would let us use that connection in this incomplete state for about 60 seconds. So we have 60 seconds to use this as a proxy, tear it down, and the sensor will be none the wiser. So that's a sufficiently long time to do that. So compare this to the previous designs. The main thing that we've added again is this capability to work without an inline blocking flow, inline blocking element. That is, we can do this with a passive tap at an ISP. Tap Dance also functions with asymmetric flows, so if it can only see the client's traffic, it can still work. This isn't unique to Tap Dance, but it does require some of the tricks that we specified earlier, such as the chosen ciphertext side channel. Looking forward into the future, we're most interested in getting a real-world deployment. This is the end goal for this type of design, and this is a step in that direction. And we're working with a number of ISPs toward that. Another area of future work is what we call a single packet tap dance. That is a stateless version of this idea where you encode the entire request inside of the ciphertext packet and do it in one single packet, essentially. Other areas are traffic fingerprinting defenses. How do we find ways to prevent the sensor from seeing that this kind of looks like a weird connection either through round trip timings or the packet lengths are different than it expects. And this is an open problem not only in Tap Dance or end-to-middle proxies, but even normal proxies as well. And finally, looking at active defenses specific to Tap Dance, how we can do that with an ISP's permission or how those are effective against the probes that the sensor might send. So to conclude, Tap Dance mainly removes the inline blocking requirement from end-to-middle proxies, which eases deployment for those ISPs. Continues to function with asymmetric traffic, and this is really a trade-off between attack vulnerability to these active attacks, which have sort of this complex defense, and the ability to deploy. And we think that having something that can be deployed but have a sort of nuanced threat model and defense strategy is better than having something that can never be deployed due to cost or ISP unwillingness. So with that, I'll wrap up and answer any questions. Thanks.
Hi, hello. Thank you very much for your talk.
Thanks.
One thing I'm not quite sure on, or I'm not quite able to understand is, when the client is making the initial request to the decoy server and the tap server is listening in the middle, what is it that the tap server is looking for that the sensor isn't able to see? And if there is...
Right. So I didn't go into too much detail of this. This is a good question. This is kind of sort of built on top of the stuff that the previous designs have done. But this is the idea that there's this steganographic tag that any client can produce with the Tap Dance proxy's public key, but only the Tap Dance proxy with its private key can distinguish from random. And we're encoding this tag as it is in the ciphertext of this request. And so to the sensor, this ciphertext looks like, you know, uniform distribution of what ciphertext normally looks like, uniform random strings. But to the Tap Dance proxy, it can sort of pull the ciphertext out in the expected place and decrypt it using its private key and just say, oh yes, this is actually a real tag. It says, you know, that this is a Tap Dance tag and this is the data that I can use to decrypt that TLS connection.
Thank you.
Yep.
Peter Honeyman, University of Michigan. You talked to a number of ISPs about deployment. Some said yes, you were surprised. I imagine a bunch said no as well.
So all of them said no for the previous designs. Since we've implemented Tap Dance, we've only talked to one in the capacity of asking them, yes or no.
I wanted to ask. I mean, how do you characterize the difference between those that would say yes and those that would say no? I mean, I would be surprised as well that any would be interested at all in deploying something like this. What's their nature?
So what's the nature of the ISPs that are willing to sit in a room with
us
and talk to us?
Versus the ones that just rejected out of hand, like I would expect all of them to.
Right. So I think that the ISPs that we're talking to are not huge ISPs, first of all, so that helps. There are actual people that we can talk to, and it's not sort of a faceless, like, you know, thing. But you're right. So we have talked to research ISPs. We have talked to upstreams of... I don't want to name sort of specific ISPs, but they are sort of small regional sort of tier two ISPs that have say, I don't know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands.
Are they activists or in some way?
In some cases, they are. In other cases, they're sort of interested in the research aspects. So I'd say activists and researchers are sort of the area. But again, this is looking forward to sort of deployment as a sort of test first. And then once it's proven to work at an ISP, looking more long-term to figure out how it can be deployed in a way that's compatible with a larger ISP's incentives.
I have one quick question, which sure. is, again, so we know, you know, historically the active offense is certainly happening. So do you believe that the active defense approaches can be done in a way that are inoffensive to deployability?
So that's a good question. I think that that's a discussion that sort of has to happen on a per ISP basis. I think some ISPs will certainly say no. I think it's certainly cheaper than saying, can we put an inline box at your in line with your production traffic? I think it's a slightly easier ask. It's not going to come for free, but it's certainly going to be easier to deploy than the previous approaches. So I think, yes, in a long term, I think we will be able to get that from ISPs.
Thank you for your nice work. And we will move to the next talk.
Thanks.